It's time now for our ongoing series discussing substance use disorder as a treatable disease, brought to you by the Grays Harbor Consortium.
I am Selena Meekum. I'm the interim CEO of Willapa Behavioral Health.
And first off, what's Willapa Behavioral Health?
Willapa Behavioral Health is a community health agency, and we have three locations. We're in Long Beach, Raymond, and Montesano, and we specialize in the treatment of almost anything you could think of, mental health, substance use, anger management, domestic violence, problem gambling, children. Pretty much if you need it, we can either provide it or else we'll work on getting a program set up so we can provide it.
Wow. Okay. Very cool. A big umbrella that you guys have.
Yes, yes.
All right, very good. Well, we're here to talk about substance abuse.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess the first thing to start out, we are going to concentrate on harm reduction.
Yes, it is a hot button issue.
Harm reduction.
Especially right now.
What do people mean when they say harm reduction, especially when it comes to addicts?
So harm reduction is basically a tool that people use to help people eventually get to recovery. At least that's the hope. A lot of people don't necessarily understand harm reduction because they think that it is just allowing someone to continue on in their addiction without doing anything. However, harm reduction is about keeping people safe long enough in order for them to be able to seek change, because people are not always ready to change. Just because we're uncomfortable with your substance use does not mean that you're uncomfortable with your substance use.
Right, exactly.
Yeah. And so, as we know, substance use can sometimes lead to like death. And so what the hope of harm reduction is to keep you safe as long as possible, even though you're continuing to make that choice that is harmful to you. It's to keep you safe enough while you continue to make that choice in order to give you enough time to actually find a way to make change.
Now, how do you keep them safe and alive? I mean, are we talking different types of drugs and stuff?
Yes. So harm reduction has multiple tools within the substance using community. So one of them is Suboxone and Methadone. Those are used for opiate use disorder. When a person uses opiates, they are oftentimes their lives will start to grow out of control really fast. And whether it's from using prescription medication that you weren't aware that you could eventually develop an addiction to just you ended up using heroin at a party one night, it can help you so that you can basically be functional. It helps cover the receptors of, oh my gosh, one second.
No, that's okay.
I'm so sorry. I can feel myself getting anxious and I'm nervous and I'm so sorry. I apologize.
You're just talking to me. No problem. Okay.
So, okay. Yes. With Suboxone, it helps make people functional. It covers up the opioid receptors so that heroin and other substances that have opiates in them are no longer effective. So you don't get that high. It allows you to be able to function without the cravings. It allows you to not worry about getting high, and it allows you to actually get your life back. And so there's also Vivitrol, which can help with alcohol use disorder, and it has been indicated as well for opiate use disorder. However, usually Suboxone and Methadone are used for opiate use disorder. They're working on something for methamphetamines right now, but they don't have anything just yet. And harm reduction, too, as well, could be for smokers, people who like nicotine. The patch is considered a form of harm reduction because then you don't have the smoke going into your lungs. You're still getting like what you need to be able to be functional, but you're not necessarily hurting your body at that level.
Uh-huh. Now, The drugs, you say it affects the receptors so that if I'm a heroin addict and I'm on, and I can't say the name that you just said of that drug, but it cancels out the receptors so that when I in effect shoot up, I don't get that high anymore?
Yeah. So I wish everybody could see. So it's basically like you got your receptor. I'm holding up my fist here, and then it comes over kind of like a cap over the the receptor so that if you were to shoot up, it would not be able to go into that receptor, so you wouldn't get the high. Oh. The idea is, though, that you use the Suboxone or the methadone so that you don't have the desire to shoot up and you don't shoot up. And it's not always shooting up. Sometimes it's snorting.
Right, exactly.
Or, yeah, ingesting, but... It takes away that desire, because if you're using Suboxone or methadone, you've made the decision, or you're trying to make the decision to actually stop the use of the opiate. So generally speaking, you shouldn't still be trying to shoot up. However, people who are just not, who are struggling to make that change are still trying to shoot up. However, they don't get the same high as they do.
And if they don't get the same high, then they're oh, it's not even worth it then.
Correct. Yep.
At least that's the hope.
That's the hope, yes.
That's the hope. Okay, now I can just hear listeners out there saying, well, doesn't harm reduction just enable people to be addicts?
Yes, that is something
I
that
mean,
people...
You know, that's okay, sure. We'll replace one drug with another one. I can hear people saying that.
Yeah, people actually say that a lot. I've gotten a lot of really mean messages lately.
I'm sorry.
About that same thing.
I didn't send them.
Thank you, Reese. Okay. Thank you for being nice.
Yeah, I did not send them.
No, this is not about enabling at all. This is about giving someone the opportunity to live long enough to find their way to change, because it is not easy. When you are addicted, you are in a world that you cannot escape. You lose all sense of reality. You lose motivation to do anything else. The only thing that matters is that high. And so harm reduction is a way to be able to keep you safe long enough until you can find your way out of that and find a little moment in all of that thought process of like looking for the high, until you can find that break of like, okay, I need to make a change. And so it allows people to be able to stay alive long enough. People are going to use regardless if you tell them to or not. Simply telling someone like, ooh, you're gross, stop using, I hate you, you're a terrible person, God hates you. None of that is going to change anything. In fact, it actually makes things a lot worse. Shaming someone is so much worse and so much more counterproductive in recovery than simply trying to help them find a way to be safe in their decisions until they're ready to make the change.
And I could see, like, I come up to you and say to you, you're a bad person. You're using those drugs all the time, and you're just really bad. That doesn't help your self-esteem and probably forces you into more drug use to make you feel better, huh?
Absolutely, absolutely. It's called a guilt-shame spiral, and it happens all the time. Most of the people who come in my office, when I do a substance use assessment, most of the people who come in my office have some form of either trauma that has happened to them. And, different communities have different levels of trauma. In the certain community that I work in, there's a lot of trauma that's happened. And it is really hard for people to be able to stay in their own minds and sit with the understanding and the knowledge that something that awful happened to them. And so as part of an escape, they use substances. And the substance helps them to feel normal. Because when they aren't high, then they start to think about how that time they were victimized by this person that they should have been able to trust, that was their friend or their family, and instead it hurt them. Like, I've heard story after story, like people who wake up in these abandoned warehouses and there's blood running down their leg and they're not sure what happened, and just all these things. And we as a society expect people to just sit with that and like go on and be productive members of society, and we don't understand how that trauma affects a person, so we don't offer them help, and then that person ends up turning to substances sometimes to be able to like stop that pain so that they don't have to stay in their own head. And then we get mad about it because they're trying to cope with something that is so painful and awful for them to sit with. And I think that we as a society could benefit so much more from people just stopping for a second and getting curious instead of offended. Brené Brown is amazing. I don't know if anybody's heard of her. That's kind of one of the things that she has been putting out there lately, is get curious instead of offended. We as a society are so interested right now in our rage and our anger and our offense. And it's understandable, because there are so many ugly things happening. Like, there are so many ugly things in this world. But how are we to come together and like show love and show care and create a community when all we are doing is just getting offended and being angry? Like, all these ugly things that are happening because someone is in this negative space in their mind. And if there's a negative space that you're in, how is there also supposed to be love and caring in existence as well.
Do they, having not been an addict, thank God, mm-hmm. Do they feel that they get more love if they're high?
No.
Or is it just they don't even think about the problems that they have?
Actually, getting high helps them escape the fact that they are unloved. Many addicts, and I'm not making blanket statements
right.
ever. Everybody's road
everybody's
is different.
Different. Yeah.
Many of them, they have either, one, come from a place where they have never been loved, where they have always been rejected, where they have never felt like they fit in. And so using substances helps them just be able to forget that fact that they don't have a place in this world. And then there are others who have done some bad things, who have lost their family support, and they can't sit with that. They can't bear the fact that they don't have that love anymore and that they have been rejected from their community. And so the substance use helps them to be able to forget all those things and to not care about it. And we as humans are built to connect. And it's interesting because I think a lot of living organisms in this world are built to connect. I'm reading this book called The Hidden Life of Trees, which is really interesting. And it talks about how social trees are and how trees that, yeah, they're social. They talk to each other. They help each other.
Really?
Yes. In fact, when a tree is not doing well, it can be sent resources from another tree through this underground fungal mylineal connection. I'd have to look at the word again. But it talks about how trees in a forest thrive and do better together as a community because they're all connected. And the ones where humans have gone in and cut down the trees and like thinned everything out, the trees stop thriving. They don't do well. In fact, it takes them about 10 years to recover from that. And I think that is such a great kind of metaphor for how we as humans are as well, because we in communities, we thrive better. We do better. But when someone comes in and like cuts us down, or cuts other people down within our community, we don't do as well. Like we don't thrive as well. And so, I don't know. I think we could just, harm reduction is a way to still give people community, give them help, give them acceptance rather than, turning them away or just simply telling them like, well, fix it. That's a problem, and it makes me uncomfortable, so stop it.
It's your problem.
Yeah.
Fix it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. The harm reduction is important in your mind.
Yes.
Is it important? I mean, it helps keep people alive.
It absolutely is. Absolutely. And I'm not someone who – I've not always felt that way. I remember the first time that I learned about the concept of harm reduction I was in school, actually, and they were talking about a place that allows people to go and, like, shoot up and have a place to shoot up safely, and they provide needles. And I'm like, oh no. Oh, definitely not.
I think Seattle tried something like that, or maybe they still do.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I was just, in my mind, I had judgment going left and right because I didn't understand. I didn't stop to get curious. Instead, I just got offended because how dare you, like, violate what I feel is a moral issue, like a moral code that you just don't do. And so after I actually, like, took a pause, took a step back, and educated myself, the data shows that harm reduction is actually much more effective in helping save people's lives. It's much more effective in helping people hit recovery because it's not just about giving someone a needle or something. It's about giving them a chance to make a change. Naloxone is another item that is used for harm reduction. Naloxone is a nasal spray that you can use. If someone is having an opioid overdose, you can, mm-hmm. and they're starting to nod out and like die.
Right.
You can puff it in their nose and they should come back instantly. And then you need to call 911 really fast.
It's not like the old, Pulp Fiction movie when the person is overdosing and they get this big old huge needle and jam it into their chest and everything and
yeah.
and all of a sudden the person goes and they're back.
50% of that is correct. It's not a big needle jammed in the chest anymore. However, when you do shove it in the nose, you should back up because what it's going to do is send the person into an instant, oh my gosh, into an instant withdrawal because it hurries and it covers up all the receptors and pushes the opiates off of the receptors and covers them up. So the person's going to go into instant withdrawal. And with opiate withdrawal, it's really painful. It makes you feel like you want to die. You're not going to. Generally speaking, people don't. I mean, there's always exceptions. Generally speaking, you don't die from opiate withdrawal. However, it feels awful. And so someone who's like nodding out and you shove it in there and they're not expecting it and all of a sudden their body comes to life and it doesn't feel good, they may be like swinging or flailing. So yeah, 50% of that is right.
Okay, so the flailing and all that, but not the big old huge needle in the middle of the chest.
No.
Was that something that was done before? Was there, or is it... Was that just fantasy in Quentin Tarantino's mind?
I think that was more fantasy in Quentin Tarantino. I mean, it's a possibility. It's a little bit out of my scope, so I'm not sure. I could see it being maybe something to, like, speed up the heart because an opiate makes your system fall asleep, and so you're just kind of, like, falling asleep until you die. and that could be speeding your system up.
And in effect, that is what an overdose is.
Yes.
Your body functions just slow down and just stop functioning because of the opioids.
Mm-hmm.
That's what an overdose is then, when they overdose on opioids.
I know, it's a tough one to say. Try spelling it. No. There's a bunch of I's in there.
M-I-S-S-I-S-S-I-T. Yeah. Opioids, okay. The opioid receptors in your brain.
Yes.
How did we identify those? I mean, I know you're not a scientist or anything like that, but I see a bunch of letters behind your name, like you know, you're a smart person.
Oh, thank you.
How did they discover? Do you know?
Oh my goodness! I actually was reading about this the other day, and now because you're asking me about it, I'm not going to be able to recall the information. Oh my goodness, I cannot remember the history, okay. And I apologize.
Oh, don't.
I know that they have fine-tuned. So opioid overdose has been around for a long period of time. There used to be like opioid dens and stuff that wreaked havoc in China across history, kind of thing. And so there have been things that they've done to help overdose over the period of time. But since we hit on this opioid epidemic, they've really started to fine tune it. And that's when naloxone came about. But naloxone has been around for a while. We've just made it more mainstream. And we've been trying to really push trainings and things on it. We have a woman who works for us. Her name is Bethany. And she does a bunch of naloxone trainings for our community to teach people how to use it. And she gives out free naloxone to anybody who would like it and to people who use. And this way, it basically makes people, it allows people to be prepared because, unfortunately, in the society we live in, regardless if you know people and hang around that crowd or not, you may come across someone someday who is overdosing. And to be able to have that naloxone with you and save a life is a big deal.
Now, I would assume then, with what you're saying, like EMTs have that available to them when they go out on a run.
Yes, they do. Yeah. And there's actually, I'm just going to throw this out there, there's actually been some fentanyl that has started to sneak its way in this area.
We had a story about that.
Yes.
A teenage boy over in Hoquiam.
Yeah.
They had to give him five doses.
Yep. I was just going to say, usually just one puff will do it.
Right.
But what's been happening lately with the fentanyl is it takes like two puffs, three puffs, four puffs. Like it's taking a lot more. And sometimes there's not enough puffs in the world to save you because it's too late. However, it's taking a lot more. And I don't think people who use substances are aware of what's in them, because when I get your analysis results back, clients will say, well, I just used this, but you will see a long list of things in there that they had no idea that they were using, and one of them was fentanyl, in which fentanyl is like an opiate on steroids.
It's a killer.
Yes, it will kill you. Just like a small amount that's like way smaller than like Lincoln's head on a penny could kill you.
Can bring up two names. Michael Jackson, Prince.
Yes.
Both of them had fentanyl in their systems. Yep. And it was accidental overdoses in both cases.
Yeah.
But you don't know what you're getting when you buy on the street.
This is very true.
I mean, your local dealer does not go through the Food and Drug Administration to get his drugs approved or anything.
There are not a lot of ethical dealers out there,
I don't know why.
I don't either.
All they're worried about is making the money.
Mm-hmm.
So and the fentanyl is getting into other drugs now.
Yes.
And that makes it very dangerous.
Yes, it does.
And is it to increase the high?
Yeah. Like, that's kind of a question that everybody's sort of been asking themselves, that we always ask ourselves, because throughout history, there's always been tainted drugs that are put out on the street. And we're all just kind of looking at ourselves being like, what the heck? Why would anybody do that? Mm-hmm. And it does increase the high. However, you might not necessarily come back from that high.
Right.
But when you're lost in addiction or you're in pain, which a large number of people who are lost in addiction are in severe pain, like there's been so many things that have happened to them. And when you're in your addiction, there's a lot of trauma that tends to happen to people because you're not surrounded by super healthy people who are doing amazing things in the world. You generally tend to surround yourself with people who will accept you, which is the substance using community. And so you're just, there's trauma that can happen there because hurt people sometimes.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And so it definitely gives a better high is my understanding, and a lot more dangerous high.
Yeah, a lot more dangerous.
Yeah.
And that is something that people should be aware of if they have anybody in their family.
Yes.
who is abusing, especially heroin. I understand fentanyl is getting into methamphetamines, too.
Yes, it is. I see that sometimes in urinalysis results as well.
And the addicts, like you said, you do the urinalysis and they say, well, yeah, I shot up some heroin, and then you're finding fentanyl and
yep.
other drugs in there.
Yep.
They're surprised about that?
Interestingly enough, they're not as, like, worried about it as I am.
Okay. Yeah.
And I think that's just because they kind of, sometimes they accept the consequence of their action.
Oh, really?
Well, they accept some consequences. Not a lot of consequences. They're very creative in, like, avoiding consequences,
right.
Which I get. We all are.
We all are. Join us next Monday morning at 8:40 a.m. for our continuing discussion on substance use disorder as a treatable disease, brought to you by the Grays Harbor Consortium, exclusively on 103.5 FM and 1450 a.m. KBKW. To hear archived discussions, log on to gograysharbor.com.